This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bussin. I'm a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss the health benefits of medical mushrooms with holistic nutritionist Kristen Shiner. We'll find out about your liver health with Dr. Vaughn Watts. We'll learn new findings about RSV with immunization expert and professor Dr. Mark Loeb. And lastly, we'll discover our common sixth sense with author Rachel Schmidt. Before we get to that, here's your tonic quick shot. Researchers in Japan have made a major discovery about brain fog, one of the most common and frustrating symptoms of long COVID. Long COVID is a condition that can appear after infection with COVID-19, leaving people with ongoing problems such as fatigue, memory loss, and trouble focusing. These symptoms affect millions of people worldwide and make it hard for many to return to work or normal life. A team led by Professor Takuya Takahashi at Yokohama City University used a brain imaging method called AMPA receptor PET scanning to study how long COVID affects the brain. They found that people with brain fog had higher levels of AMPA receptors, molecules involved in memory and learning, than healthy individuals. The more severe the brain fog, the higher the receptor levels. This increase also appeared to be linked to inflammation in the brain. The findings suggest that long COVID brain fog has a real biological cause and could lead to new treatments. Future drugs that control AMPA receptor activity might help relieve symptoms, offering hope to those struggling with this long-lasting condition. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: The Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Kristen Shiner in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. This cold and flu season, discover the power of medicinal mushrooms. Rich in antioxidants and known to naturally support your immune system, medicinal mushrooms are one of nature's most powerful defenders. Trusted by Canadians for over 20 years, CanPrev Natural Health now offers medicinal mushroom supplements. Every capsule combines both fruiting body extract and mycelium, providing the full spectrum of medicinal compounds for a full spectrum of benefits. Gentle enough for daily use so you can stay supported all season long. Now available at your local health food store. Kristen Shiner is a registered holistic nutritionist who loves helping people improve their health using simple, natural strategies. She's coached individuals, families, and businesses to improve their energy, mood, and immune systems through food, lifestyle choices, and natural products. And she lives north of Toronto with her two dogs. Kristen, it's been a while, but welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Jamie. Thanks so much for having me.
So lots of talk about mushrooms lately. And I don't know, were you at CHFA recently? Do you go to the show?
You bet. It's the highlight of my year.
Me too. I go for all the free chocolate, but also I see where all the trends are. And, you know, for a while it was fermented foods and bone broth. But over the last couple of years, a lot of talk about mushrooms. So I thought it would be fun to bring you on the show and discuss them. You up for it?
You bet.
So what exactly are medicinal mushrooms? And just to clear it up, we're not talking about psychedelics here, are we?
We are not. That would be something. But psychedelic mushrooms, very different because they have a psychoactive compounds in them. They're working on the central nervous system to create this short, intense experience. Very different from medicinal mushrooms. So medicinal mushrooms are what we're talking about today. And those are mushrooms that have bioactive compounds. So they're having a therapeutic benefit on the body. They are longer lasting, longer working, and they're really acting on our immune system. So totally different system in the body, but equally amazing, I think, medicinal mushrooms.
Okay. So, other than immunity, what kind of health benefits do medicinal mushrooms actually offer? Is it just immunity, or are there other things too?
That's such a great question because there are different types of medicinal mushrooms, and there's a common thread amongst all of them. So all medicinal mushrooms have this benefit for our immune system. And what I love about mushrooms is that they are what is referred to as modulators. So they're not revving our immune system really high, really fast, and sort of pressuring it to work harder. They're just keeping it in this really nice sweet spot. So if your immune system is dragging a little bit and you feel like you're kind of catching everything that's going around, then the mushrooms are going to help bring them up to optimal. But they're safe to stay on long term because once we hit that sweet spot, they're not going to keep revving, 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 right? We don't want to overwork or tire out our immune system. And so they're just these wonderful modulating substances that keep us in that sweet spot long term. And so that is a common thread amongst all mushrooms, but there are different mushrooms that each have become known to have its own little superpower. So you may have heard of lion's mane, which is a type of medicinal mushroom that addresses the immune system, but it also has these extra special benefits around cognition and memory and brain health. So some folks love to use it if they need a little extra boost for their focus, or they have a project that they're working on, or they're just feeling like they're not as sharp as they used to be. Maybe they're going through some stress and their mind is wandering. So lion's mane is great for that particular superpower. I love another mushroom called cordyceps, which has this adaptogenic property to it. And so, what that means is that it helps our body better adapt to stressors. So, again, we're still getting that immune modulating benefit, but we get this extra special benefit of if we're putting our body under a lot of stress, maybe we are athletic or we're training for an event, we're a weekend warrior that loves to really push it on the weekends with our outdoor activities. That puts a lot of extra stress and strain on our system. And so cordyceps is known to have this superpower for really helping our body adapt and manage to those stressors and help keep our performance high. So, like I say, there's different types of mushrooms, all have that one common theme of the immune benefit, but then each of them have these extra little special superpowers. Reishi is another one that's sort of known as this longevity mushroom, and it helps with stress, but more on the emotional side. It's almost like helps soothe the nervous system, soothes the stress. So rather than the physical stress of the cordyceps, it helps us with the emotional stressors. They all do really cool extra things over and above the immune system help.
Okay, so now that we're leaning into some of the ones that people may have heard of, let's talk about a few others. So what about chaga? What is it known for?
Yeah, chaga is known more so for helping to, again, support immune system. But if someone's looking for a little extra with antioxidant support. So if we think about our car, when it's exposed to the elements over time, that metal can rust because it's exposed to oxidative stress or oxidative damage. And we have the exact same type of thing happen in our body. Our natural bodily processes expose our cells to oxidative damage. And that's not a bad thing, but we just want to keep that in balance. So if we've heard about, antioxidant-rich foods or nutrients, those are meant to help balance out any oxidative stress that we're naturally coming into contact with so that we're not seeing degeneration in the body, right? We're able to better balance things like inflammation or cardiovascular issues or metabolic issues. And so getting some extra antioxidants from chaga can be a great side benefit from that mushroom.
One last one, turkey tail.
Ooh, you saved my favorite for last. I love turkey tail because it's really known as a powerful infection fighter. So that is one mushroom that I actually keep in my medicine cabinet this time of year. I get a new bottle And anytime I feel that tickle start in the back of my throat or a little bit of congestion happening, those first signs that I might be coming down with something, I get some extra turkey tail on board, and it has kept me really healthy for several years. I am like, since I discovered the superpower of turkey tail, I've been so thrilled with the results. So it really does help to shorten the duration of any colds or flus or lessen the severity of symptoms. And I've seen that benefit time and again. So that's my little back pocket trick that I use when cold and flu season comes along.
Okay, so in respect of turkey tail, it sounds like you take it when there are symptoms. With respect to the other ones that we discussed, the cordyceps, the lion's mane, the chaga, the reishi, can we take those sort of like we would take daily vitamins? Or is it more like if we need a boost or something, we should be looking at the mushrooms? Are they safe to take regularly?
Yeah, one of the things I love about all medicinal mushrooms is they have an extremely high safety profile. So because they have that modulating effect and they're not stimulating our body to do too much or too little of something, they're safe across many different populations, and can certainly be taken long term. With the turkey tail, that is one that you could take ongoing as well. I just like to take extra when I feel myself coming down with something. So all of them are safe and effective to take ongoing. And you could choose one. And like I say, I zero in on the turkey tail and take some extra of that when I feel like, maybe I'm coming down with something. But depending on what your specific need or health goal might be, you could zero in on one and take a bigger dose of one particular mushroom. But you could also take a blend if you feel like, hey, I kind of like the sounds of all of these things. I feel
Right.
like I could use a little bit of benefit in all of these areas. Then you can certainly blend them together and take just a little bit of each mushroom ongoing, and they'll keep your immune system supported. You'll get a little bit of each of these special superpower benefits. But if you wanted to really zero in on one and lean into one particular benefit, then I would say choose that one where you can get a higher dose of the specific thing that you're looking for.
Are most people, do they have a level of understanding that they could just pick and choose which mushrooms they think they need and they should take? Or should they be consulting with somebody before they take these types of mushrooms?
It's definitely something you could play with. And I think things like lion's mane especially has gotten a bit of a glow up. And so there's more familiarity with it and people understand that benefit. But it's something that certainly anyone at your, friendly local health food store could help you navigate. If you're feeling not quite certain of where to start, then a blend is just a perfect place to start because you're not going to be leaning in too far into one benefit or another. You're just going to really get this nice broad coverage.
So I like mushrooms to eat. I love chanterelles. I love morels. Sometimes I'll see mushrooms like lion's mane at the store where you can buy it to eat. Why not just eat these mushrooms? Like
Yeah.
can we do that, or should we be taking it as formulated?
Yeah, absolutely. You can eat them for sure. You're just not getting the same potency. So you don't have to choose one or the other. You could eat them and take a supplement at the same time, or just choose one or the other. If we're going food only, then we're just not getting the potency that we would get if we chose a supplement. What supplements are great for is helping us get, certainly more density than if we were to eat. We probably couldn't eat the volume of mushrooms that we would get, into a formulation. And there are different types of products on the market. Sometimes when we look at a mushroom product, it's simply a mushroom that's been dried, ground into powder, and put into a package for ease of use, right?
Right.
Because sometimes folks aren't quite sure what to do with mushrooms in the kitchen. And so they like the idea of the benefits, but it's much less intimidating to just get a container of powder and add that to a smoothie or stir it into their oatmeal. And that's how they can get some of the benefits. And then there's a sort of a third layer, a third step, which is an extract. So we really want to get the concentrated benefits, then you could get a supplement that has gone through an extraction process. So essentially, we still start with that same mushroom powder, and then we put it through hot water, and we let all those good bioactive compounds dissolve into the hot water. And we do that process a few times. And for some mushrooms like chaga, which are really dense, we even put it through an extra step, which is like an alcohol rinse to pull out even more compounds that are not water soluble, but they would dissolve into an alcohol base. And now we have this really potent formulation where we've pulled out all of those good bioactive compounds from the mushroom. We've separated it from the fiber, and we're able to actually measure what gets left in this soup. And so we can create a formula where we know exactly what potency we're getting, and we can replicate it. So we can do that time and time again. So if we're just foraging for mushrooms or buying them at the grocery store, are we getting some benefit? Absolutely. But we're missing some potency, and we're missing that standardization because there's just natural variation in nature. But if we take a mushroom through this extraction process, then we can ensure that we're getting all those bioactive compounds in a particular potency, and we're getting the same amount each time.
So if somebody were inclined to supplement with mushrooms, what should they be looking for in their products?
Well, I think that if they are really going for those therapeutic benefits, then something that is a standardized extract, so they know they're getting the potency and they know that they're getting the same amount of those important compounds in every capsule, that's really something to pay attention to. But when it comes to mushrooms, there are two different parts. So there's the part that we would find in the grocery store that we see kind of growing on a tree trunk in the forest. There's also a part of the mushroom that is hidden. It grows into whatever it's growing on, so either below the soil or into the wood. And it's almost like the root system. It's very fine and fibrous, and it's called the mycelium part of the mushroom. And that's not something that we would find when we just buy mushrooms to eat at the grocery store. And it's not in some of our extract products. And so there is benefit in that mycelium as well. So something that blends both this potent extraction but doesn't leave out that mycelium, that's really going to be like the gold standard if you wanted to make sure you're getting all the good parts of the mushroom into a supplement.
Time for one last question, and this is sort of like an overview, so time to fill in all the gaps. If somebody were looking to start taking medicinal mushrooms, what advice would you give them?
I would advise them to start with a multi-mushroom formula, something that has a little bit of everything in it, unless there really was some big goal that was jumping out for them that was really glaring, then start with the multi-mushroom because you're going to get a little bit of all of the good stuff for all of these different superpowers that each mushroom brings to the party, and you're going to get that really beautiful immunomodulating effect. And if it doesn't feel too overwhelming, I would try and seek out a formulation that does have a little bit of both of that mycelium and that potent extract. I really, in all of the research that I've done on mushrooms, see benefit in both aspects. And I think that if we blend those two things together, we get the very best out of the product that we're taking.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, Jamie.
We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back on The Tonic. Does your reflection match how you feel, or are stubborn areas holding you back? At Form, Face, and Body, they specialize in restoring your youthful glow and sculpting the body you desire, so your outer appearance reflects your inner vitality. Visit formfacebody.ca and see how they can help you rediscover your confidence. Call 416-447-6176 to schedule your complimentary consultation and reclaim your vitality. Does your skin need some pampering? Treat yourself to a luxurious exotic oil from New Roots Herbal, organic or wild-crafted. These oils are sourced from around the globe and tested to ensure purity. Never diluted, they're rich in vitamins and nutrients for radiant, healthy-looking skin. Choose from a wide variety including argan, rosehip, or skin lover's blend. Now available in a stunning gift set, perfect for that special someone. Available only at fine health food stores.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Busson.
Dr. Vaughn Watts is at the forefront of gut-brain functional medicine, helping thousands translate symptoms as signals into lasting recovery. A former military intelligence professional turned clinician, he blends systems-level thinking with evidence-informed practice to solve the two upstream drivers of chronic illness, deficiency and toxicity. As the author of Foundational Wellness, The Simple System That Ends Doctor Dependency Forever, he offers a clear, stepwise framework that turns complex science into simple daily habits. Today, he advises executives, teams, and media on building energy, focus, and resilience in a high-stress, digital-first world. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to focus on one of the key organs, and from time to time we cover it from a natural health perspective, but rarely from a medical health perspective, and that's the liver. Why is the liver called the silent CEO of your body?
Yeah, the liver is called that because, I mean, it controls almost 500 different functions in the body. So basic things like, one of the main things is detoxification, filtration, immune system, hormone regulation, nutrient metabolism and storage. There's a long list of things that the liver either directly or indirectly controls.
Beyond detox, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, what's one job that the liver does that might surprise people?
Well, what I specialized in practice was autoimmune thyroid. And what many people don't understand is that the thyroid creates two hormones, and one of the hormones that it creates, it needs to be converted from T4 to T3, and 60% of thyroid hormone conversion happens in the liver. So if you don't have a healthy liver, you're not going to have a healthy thyroid pathway either.
So in that instance, what would happen if the T4 doesn't get converted into T3?
Yeah, so T3 is the active form. So that's the form that actually your cells utilize for metabolism. So, I mean, you would experience fatigue, brain fog, just a myriad of thyroid-type symptoms, when the reality of it is it's not your thyroid at all. It's oftentimes your liver.
And in that instance, you know, what do you need to do in order to help the liver transform the T4 into T3?
Well, the very first thing is diet. Diet is huge, huge, huge. Eating real food, whole foods, avoiding ultra-processed foods. That's the very first thing. But if you are experiencing thyroid issues as a result of dysfunctional liver, I also suggest getting on some, you know, liver support products, things that have ingredients like milk thistle, NAC, TUDCA. There's a number of things that you can take to help flush out that liver and really help support the liver to do the job it was created to do.
Are we talking about fatty liver disease here, or are we talking about something else?
Well, that's a big one. Now in the U.S., about 40% of Americans have a form of liver disease, and it's not what we have been accustomed to. I'm a Gen X guy. I'm almost 50.
Yep.
You know, we usually think of fatty liver disease as, you know, alcohol-related disease, but the majority of fatty liver disease we're seeing now is not from alcoholism. It's actually non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is caused by ultra-processed foods, which contain massive amounts of carbs, which break down into sugar, which is what alcohol is. Alcohol is sugar. And so it's really the overconsumption of sugar, which is causing this fatty liver disease.
And I may have buried the lead here, but what's the common habit that people have that is straining our liver the most? Is it that carb sugar consumption, or is it something else?
Yeah, no, really, it's the carb sugar consumption. It is also ex being exposed to toxins. A lot of these ultra processed foods also just happen to be the foods that are heavily sprayed by pesticides, and all those pesticides have to clear through the liver. Everything clears through the liver, and so when you stress the liver out because you have a very poor diet, and you're also exposing it to external toxins like herbicides, pesticides, molds, other things like that. It's just a recipe for liver dysfunction.
What are some of the early signs that you're putting your liver under strain that, our listeners might not even notice?
Yeah, there's some simple ones like brain fog is a big one, lack of energy, bruising easily, bleeding gums, all are subtle signs. But the real simple way is I always tell people there's. The best thing to do is to go just get an annual blood test and just see how what the function of your liver is at, and other, not just the liver, but other organs in the body as well. But you can do a simple blood test annually just to see what the current state of your liver is.
And what in the blood test is being tested that would identify problems in the liver? What are the
Well, you have a
markers?
couple of different enzymes, liver enzymes, and if those liver enzymes are high or low, I mean, it tells you a different story, but those are the main things that you're going to look at in a basic liver panel. And a basic liver panel, I mean, even if you paid cash for it, you're looking at under probably under $50, maybe even under $30. It's a pretty inexpensive test to do, and it gives you a pretty good indication of what the current state of your liver is.
So, if somebody's experiencing liver strain, how can they tell whether the trigger that's causing their symptomology is rooted in diet or perhaps medications they're taking or even the environmental toxins that you mentioned earlier? How do we know what's going on?
Well, one of the big things is whenever I work with a patient, I usually have them fill out different questionnaires. So it allows me to understand what they're exposing their body to, from diet to medications to potential toxins. And then we run a liver panel. If we do see that the liver enzymes are off, out of range, then the next step is we can run different tests, other tests. So then we can order like, different toxin panels that can test for heavy metal toxicity, mold toxicity, and other environmental toxins like we talked about, pesticides, to see if there's an accumulation of any of these toxins within the body. And if that's the case, it's really not that difficult. You get on some pretty good products. There's different toxin binders that you can take and other support products that can help to bind those toxins and pull them out through the digestive tract.
What are you seeing in your practice? When somebody comes in and you've identified that the liver is off, is it mostly diet? Is it mostly meds? Is it mostly environment? What are you seeing?
Kind of depends on the age. If it's an older patient, oftentimes it's medication because a lot of patients are on three, four, five, six, seven. I've had one lady come in one time and had a whole sheet from top to bottom of medication, which all of that filters through the liver. Younger people, you're looking more diet related. But all of them, what I'm seeing across the board, when I run toxin panels on them, just about I would say, gosh, over 90% have toxin buildup, and we don't, and most people don't even know it.
What is something that we can do from a lifestyle perspective that would support liver health?
Yeah, the very first thing is eat real food, and I make diet really simple. I'm not a purist where you got to be this free and that free, and don't touch this, don't touch that. I'd rather people eat healthy, and if you splurge a little bit here and there, try to stick to the 80-20 rule. Try to eat healthy 80% of the time, then eat real food. And by that, I mean if it grows on the ground, in the ground, swims or flies, you're good to go. If it comes out of a bottle, package, or can, try to avoid it. That's the first thing. And diet is really one of the best things that you can do. But if you're already in dealing with some liver dysfunction or liver disease, diet number one, and then get on some really good supplementation to help provide liver support as well as liver detox so that you can start pulling the stuff that's in there out. And then you can maintain really good liver health with proper diet.
What are some of the supplements that you recommend?
So There's a number. If you're going to get a liver product, these are things to look for. Things that contain milk thistle, NAC, glutathione. But there's a trick with glutathione. There's a lot. Not all supplements are created equal. So if you're getting a glutathione, it needs to be in nano form. And then also, there's another product called Tudca, which is Tudca. It's a bile salt. Now, your toxins, what happens is your liver takes toxins and the bile kind of takes those toxins and stores it and pulls it out through the digestive tract. So when you it's good, it's important to have good bile flow because that's what's pulling the toxins out. And Tudca helps increase good bile flow and helps with that process.
Are there foods that we can eat that will help with the good flow of bile? Like, do you believe in digestifs and things like that?
You mean like enzymes and stuff like that, or
No, I'm talking literally about, having bitter food to help with the digestive process
Oh
and
yeah, for sure. The only problem with that is most people who struggle to want to eat that kind of food. So I usually, like I said, I usually try to get how can I get the majority of people eating in a way that's going to be healthy. And one of them is eat less sugar, eat whole foods. If you can do that, your liver is made, the body is made to filter out the garbage and get it out. The problem is we are just so inundated with garbage, especially here in the United States, with all the toxins and chemicals that are in our foods. The liver is just trying to keep up when we eat fast food and ultra processed foods. But when you switch over, the liver is a resilient organ. I mean, it is meant to. I mean, the liver can regenerate after losing 70% of its mass. So, I mean, it's an extremely resilient organ. You just have to give it a chance. So, if you can just change in your diet and eating a healthier diet with way less sugar, less alcohol, there's a good chance that you're going to be able to get that liver functioning the way it needs, and then you're also being able to maintain it very easily.
time for one last question, and that is, how do you feel about liver cleanse products? Advocate of it or not?
I'm a huge advocate. I take it every single day. I actually own a supplement company, and the very first product we released is a liver support product because that's how important the liver is. I mean, that's a big control center, and so I'm a huge advocate of that. And I take a daily liver product, even though I have a good healthy diet. I take a liver product daily anyways, just because I want to ensure that my liver is functioning at a high level.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
That was Dr. Vaughn Watts. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss new RSV findings on The Tonic. The Big Carrot is a worker-owned natural food market that's been committed to organic, local, non-GMO, and sustainable food systems since opening in Toronto in 1983. They're a one-stop shop for health and wellness, offering organic produce, natural grocery, natural beauty and skincare products, and a holistic dispensary for natural supplements and more. The Carrot Kitchen and coffee bars serve delicious meals and drinks using high-quality ingredients sourced from local farmers and suppliers that prioritize organic, non-GMO, and/or sustainable practices. Visit one of their two locations in Toronto today. Shop the Big Carrot on Instacart now. Cataracts are the leading cause of vision loss in adults over 50. But the good news is they're highly treatable. At Oakville Laser Eye Center, patients receive advanced laser cataract surgery with personalized surgeon-led care. Using cutting-edge technology and customized treatment plans, their expert team helps patients see clearly again to help them rediscover life's details. Book your consultation today at www.oakvillelaser.ca or call 905-337-3736.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
New research shows respiratory syncytial virus, more commonly known as RSV, can have greater impact on older adults and actually cost our healthcare system more in total direct healthcare costs following hospitalization as compared to the flu. Joining us today to discuss this is Dr. Mark Loeb, immunization expert and professor in the Faculty of Health Sciences at McMaster University. Dr. Loeb was a lead author on that very study. Welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me, Jamie.
So for listeners who are not familiar, what is RSV?
So RSV is a respiratory virus, like influenza. So it's a virus that circulates beginning roughly in October all the way to May. And it can infect anybody. It can infect young children, middle-aged adults, older adults. But the important thing about it is that it's people at the extremes of age, either the very young or older adults, who are at high risk of complications. And those complications could include hospitalization due to pneumonia, and unfortunately, sometimes death.
So let's talk about your new research assessing the impact of RSV on certain populations. Can you go over the findings with us?
Yes, absolutely. So this was a study titled RSV Hospitalizations, Discharge Patterns, and Costs in Adults Aged 15 Years and Over in Ontario. So it was the study setting was in the province of Ontario. And basically, the study looked at 6,700 adults over the age of 50 with RSV hospitalization in the province of Ontario. So it was done approximately over a 10-year period in a sizable population. Now, of these 6,700 adults, 5,300 were matched to similar patients hospitalized with influenza. Okay, so that was one comparison, that is RSV to influenza. And the RSV population was also compared to the general hospital population of people aged 50 years and over. And then all groups were followed forward in time. And the important findings, one important finding anyway, was the mortality rate was about 30% for those adults with RSV, compared to 26% with those who have influenza, and compared to about 9% for those in the general population. So, you know, that finding really shows that the burden of RSV is comparable, if not worse, than that of influenza. Another important finding was the readmission rate. So again, these were patients who were hospitalized, and sometimes, unfortunately, after patients get discharged, they get readmitted. So the study looked at readmission rates in those same groups, and the important comparison is between RSV and influenza. And it was at about 12% at 30 days, 18% at 60 days, and 22% at 90 days. So they was comparable. Those rates of readmission were comparable between RSV and influenza. So again, it's just shows that the burden of RSV in terms of death, in terms of readmission, is substantial, comparable to influenza, if not worse. And the direct costs of care, which were basically driven mainly by hospitalization, were roughly about $60,000 for RSV versus $58,000 for influenza.
I have a question for you. So did this study look into the average stay when you're looking at cost?
Yeah, it did. But it was looking at total direct care costs. So that included, length of stay. So when we look at, direct care costs in healthcare, often the biggest driver is days, length of hospitalization.
Right, exactly.
So that's certainly an important, an important feature of this.
So what were the findings? Was RSV comparable to influenza hospital stays or longer, or is it?
It was comparable, Jimmy. I'd have to look back at the, I don't have all of the data right in front of me in terms of getting that, the exact, but it was comparable.
So you mentioned that people at both ends of the spectrum, the very young and the very old, are at higher risk. Why are older people at risk for severe long-term symptoms of RSV?
Well, okay, so there are a number of reasons why older people are at risk for severe complications of RSV. One is the fact that as you get older, you tend to collect comorbidities or illnesses.
Right.
So the frequency, for example, of chronic heart disease increases with age. People will often are more likely to have lung disease, and those are conditions that make infection with RSV, often much more complicated. And it's not only that if you have, let's say, chronic lung disease or chronic heart disease and you get infected with RSV, it's not just that you'll get, you know, more likely to wind up in the hospital, but the virus also exacerbates or triggers exacerbations of those conditions, so it makes it a lot worse. Okay, so that's one factor. The other factor is that with age, there's something called immune senescence. Okay, so that's sort of a waning of the immune system, and as you age, your immune system becomes really less robust, so not able to protect you as much as when you were younger. So that's another reason why, if you're infected with something like RSV and you're older, you might be more likely to get complications. And age itself, as an independent factor, is you know, shown study after study to be a predictor of these complications.
So, circling back to a comment that you made a few minutes ago, when we're comparing RSV to influenza, what in terms of the cost of the stay, what are those costs that make RSV more expensive than influenza with respect to the treatment?
Well, I think the biggest driver is the hospitalization.
Okay.
Right? So I would say 60,000 versus 58,000. It's I judge that as being comparable.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know, the biggest driver is the cost. So you have cost of, you know, dealing with the complications, cost of x-rays or whatever, but often, the biggest driver is just being in the hospital. You know, the daily cost of hospitalization drives things.
You also mentioned readmission rates were higher for older people with RSV due to virus complications. What were the complications, and why do you think RSV has longer impact on our health?
Well, first of all, I would characterize the readmission rates between RSV and influenza more or less as being comparable. I wouldn't say it was that much higher. In terms of the readmission rates, again, that's one thing I'd have to look back at the primary data to see if I have robust analysis of all the different reasons. But I mean, typically people get readmitted because they're continuing to have respiratory problems. They might have, you know, an exacerbation still of their underlying condition. Those are relatively common.
Okay, so if there are complications which require, you know, further treatments, this is probably something we should try and get in front of. And there is an RSV vaccine, right?
Yes. There are different companies have RSV vaccines, and it's a highly effective vaccine. So it's important to know that, you know, in the past, I won't say that RSV was looked down upon, but it never had the attention of influenza. And it's not because, you know, the burden of illness of RSV is less than influenza, right? As I've shown you, it's comparable, if not worse. And this is, you know, this has been known for a while. But the difference is that most recently, you know, in the past few years, there's been a vaccine available for RSV. So that's really important. And these are highly effective vaccines that actually reduce not only sort of, you know, detection of RSV, laboratory detection of RSV, but more of a clinical syndrome, that is RSV lower respiratory tract infection. So they're effective vaccines, and that's really, I think, to me, an important take-home message about this, that yes, this study showed a substantial burden, but there is a way to prevent this.
How can some of our older listeners protect themselves from RSV, considering that we're just kind of heading right into the season where it starts up?
Well, the very best thing, Jamie, that they can do is go meet with their doctor and say, look, you know, I've heard that there is are vaccines available for RSV to, you know, to prevent this, the complications of this serious infection. I'd like to know more about it. That would be my advice.
Are there any lifestyle choices that they could make that might help them?
Well, lifestyle, I mean, you know, there are things like, you know, hand hygiene, washing your hands, if particularly if you're immunocompromised and you're invited to a gathering where there might be other people who are or let's say have some sort of symptoms that might be RSV, then to avoid that. Those are some common sense things that aren't specific to RSV. They cut across all the respiratory viruses. But I think the most important thing is to see if you're eligible, you can get an RSV vaccine.
Terrific. Well, for those who are looking for more information about RSV, they can visit ontario.ca/page/respiratory-syncytial virus. Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
You're most welcome.
That was Dr. Mark Loeb. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss our common sixth sense on The Tonic. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com. This cold and flu season, discover the power of medicinal mushrooms. Rich in antioxidants and known to naturally support your immune system, medicinal mushrooms are one of nature's most powerful defenders. Trusted by Canadians for over 20 years, CanPrev Natural Health now offers medicinal mushroom supplements. Every capsule combines both fruiting body extract and mycelium, providing the full spectrum of medicinal compounds for a full spectrum of benefits. Gentle enough for daily use so you can stay supported all season long. Now available at your local health food store.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of The Tonic newsletter, Jamie Bussin.
Rachel Schmidt, author of Common Sixth Sense, is a mindfulness-based self-development coach, mentor, and educator with more than 20 years of experience helping people awaken to their fullest potential. She's worked with teenagers, Fortune 500 leaders, and everyone in between, guiding them to live more authentic and connected lives. She teaches mindfulness integration at the graduate level and is the founder of the consultancy Common Sixth, and you can learn more about her at www.commonsixth.com. Welcome to the show, Rachel. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks, Jamie. How are you?
I'm always fair to middling. It's very rare. It's very rare. I'm a glass half empty guy. So if I'm filling my glass, it's a rare occasion.
Okay, I'm gonna ramp that up for you today.
We can try. Many have tried. We'll see where it goes. So you have a book called Common Sixth Sense. What do you mean by that phrase? And how is it different from the way people usually think about something as simple as intuition?
Well, when you think about your common sixth sense, I want you to think about what you came with. You came with intuition. You came with your breath. You came with the ability to manage energy and awareness and self-awareness. So when we think about our common sixth sense, think about just your common sense. You look both ways before you cross the street to keep yourself safe. You walk on the right side of the sidewalk if you've got common sense. And we do this to keep us safe and keep us on the right track. So imagine if you could unleash all the things you came with, your common sixth sense skills. Can you imagine how elevated your life could be? So I think typically when people think about the sixth sense and things like that, they think about intuition. Yes, that's part of it, but there's so much more.
Is it an internal voice or is it our collective learnings and experiences, or is it something different?
All of the above, Jamie. It's the beautiful orchestra of all of those things working together.
So I understand you believe that intuition isn't just for psychics or empaths. It's something we all have. Like, do we all have it to the same degree? Are we all capable of having that level of intuition?
I would say just as we recognize the statement that everyone's on their own journey, This coincides with their level or ability of intuition. The great news is intuition is something that can be strengthened no matter where you are.
Why do you think that people ignore or mistrust that inner voice? Can I call it the inner voice?
Absolutely. Call it the inner voice. Well, we are in a connection crisis. I mean, if you think about the influence of technology, social media, we've got higher rates of anxiety and stress, depression than we've ever had. We have a loss of community. There are so many factors that are pulling people away from their inner voice. And I found in my work that when they reclaim that voice, it's not something new, Jamie. It's a reunion.
Have you learned any psychology? Like, have you done any Freudian work? Like, is the inner voice your ego, your superego? Where does it land? So,
when we get in these conversations about psychology, we can really get into more intellectual type conversations. People really want to pinpoint and identify and narrow down what it is. But intuition has so much more depth. It is something that one must experience to understand.
Is it fluid?
Sure.
Okay. So let's circle back, and I'm being curious here. So when we talk about the impact of social media, and I have lots of thoughts on that, I'm not a fan of social media. Aren't we just informing ourselves with more experience? It's just a different experience, a new experience. How does that, and if our intuition is fluid, doesn't that just build on what we have?
Well, I think the key word that we want to focus on is resonate.
Okay.
Does something resonate with us? Now, we know this is one of our common sixth sense tools, is our ability to manage energy. So many of us mismanage energy. So when something doesn't resonate with us, many times we will continue to do it, continue to accept it as truth. And this is why we've got to get back to ourselves, is so that we can make decisions that resonate with us. So when you think about social media and you think about mindlessly scrolling or being pulled in a direction because it's a targeted ad or an algorithm, those aren't necessarily things that resonate with us. And we've got to stop and ask, does this resonate?
How are you meaning resonate? Do you mean something that fulfills us, or do you mean something that informs us? Because, you know, I could read something and it like it could be highly negative, for example, right? Something just like a terrible thing that I'm reading about on social media. It resonates with me because maybe it's grounded in truth as opposed to opinion, or it's something I want to learn about, but it doesn't make me feel good. Is that resonating, or is it something else?
Ah, great question. Well, let me ask you this. How does it affect your energy? That's the key question, because we want to build a life. We want to have a state of well-being where the things around us resonate, where they have positive energetic flow in our lives. So the question we all must ask ourselves is, how is this affecting my energy? So everything we're talking about goes back to awareness, Jamie, awareness. We've got to become aware of energy, of how we connect with things, how we resonate with things, how energy impacts us.
How did you come to this sort of theory of the sixth sense? It must be personal to you.
Absolutely, of course. I mean, well, after spending 20 years listening to people, I saw a lot of common threads. People just generally feel disconnected, and they feel as though they've become too dependent on external influencers. Those are the people, technology, environments that we come in contact with, and they know that it affects their well-being. Now, for me personally, I have always been interested and focused on healthy living, well-being, mindfulness. But 10 years ago, I was faced with a serious medical challenge. I was diagnosed with a rare vestibular disorder called semicircular canal dehiscence. And that is, in layman's terms, my brain was sitting on my superior ear canal, and it wreaked havoc on my life. And I had to regroup. So this disorder, it's rather insidious, leaves people feeling dizzy. I was dizzy 40, 50 times a day. I could hear my own heartbeat every time my heart would beat. I had sound-induced vertigo. I've been on a very long medical journey of 15 doctors across the entire United States. And because everything became so exacerbated, sounds, movement, I had to find a place within myself to navigate all of that. And I leaned very heavily into mindfulness, mindfulness in a way that I hadn't before. And I began to see the incredible value of how being more mindful, being more self-connected, being more intuitive, listening to the voices within me, could really change the trajectory of my life. And not only that, I saw the incredible value it has on the people and the environments that I come in contact with as well.
We've had a lot of people speak about mindfulness on the show, and I can tell like mindfulness experts talking about sort of being grounded and being in the moment and not being judgmental about how we feel or how we're perceiving what's going on about us. In other words, I always understood mindfulness to sort of disconnect from the emotionality of what you're experiencing and without judgment, just kind of explain to yourself what's happening, which seems a little bit different than leaning into the voices that you're hearing in your subconscious. Can you reconcile that for me?
Yeah, so when I think about mindfulness, I agree. Mindfulness is about being in the present moment. Again, we're going to go back to the word awareness. It's becoming aware of what you were not previously aware of. So you have these mindful moments that really give your mind, your body, your spirit that much needed break to regroup. But now you've got to do something with that awareness that you have gained. Okay? So we have those beautiful mindful moments. We gather intel, and next we must process that intel and decide what action is best for us to get us closer to our most authentic and connected life.
Okay, if we are unhappy or if we're starting from a place where we're not connected, how can we have trust in our inner voice when we're in a state where we're unhappy to begin with? Is it possible that, some of those things that we're telling ourselves aren't that helpful? Do we
Of
have to
course.
start over?
No, we never have to start over, but key would be helping identify where those messages are coming from.
Okay.
They're not coming from your intuition, they're coming from the mind ego voice. They could be coming from the heart voice as well. They could be coming from your body voice, but those are separate voices. So you think about the sheer amount of information we are inundated with.
Yep.
Yes, our ego loves to be the head honcho and send us all sorts of useless information, right? So we've got to identify that voice. Your intuitive voice is never going to lead you astray. It is always going to keep you on track, but you've got to form a relationship with this voice. So trust for some may be earned over time. It depends on the person. Some people will have, they have very strong intuitive feelings and they completely trust from the get-go, right out the gates. For other people, especially if they're feeling down or low or really struggling with happiness, they need to start to strengthen the relationship with their intuition. And their intuition over time will prove its worth, no doubt.
Time for one last quick question, and that is for our listeners, if there was just one message to take away from Common Sixth Sense, what would that be?
Start becoming aware of your breath and start using it as an incredible resource and tool in your life. Your breath can bring you back to you every single time. All you have to do is just access it. Become aware of the power of your breath.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Kristen Scheiner, Dr. Von Watts, Dr. Mark Loeb, and Rachel Schmidt. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to The Tonic newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contests, prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.